Granada!
This is Brock and Salk.
Why did Hot Pockets not evolve further?
Why not what?
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a fan.
My body won't perform.
And 710sports.com.
Good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com as well. Good morning, buddy. It's nice to be here with you this fine morning.
Good morning, Michael.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fantastic.
Yeah.
Couldn't be better. Interesting conversation with the coach yesterday. Got quite a bit out of it, I would say. I don't think you and he saw the game the same way.
Who's that?
You and Cody. You and anybody.
Me and Pete did.
You and anybody.
No, me and Pete did. Me and a lot of the staff over there did. But me and some of the Seahawk folks around here did not.
I don't know if that's all true.
Yeah, well, Pete's going to always, you know, be on the public, on a public face. He's going to be very defensive of his players. Wow. I think he's going to always look on the positive side. I think behind the scenes, Mike, that man was torn yesterday. He was torn because it was our last show with him, and he tried to put on a good face for us, too. But he was really mad. He was mad at himself. He was disappointed in their play. That was a game from beginning to end. You know, he loves to kind of say what Scott Servais hopefully envisions the Mariners being one day, and that's just tough to beat. And he envisions his teams as being tough to beat, and they were not tough to beat on Sunday. You know, they just were not in any phase of the game. They were not tough to beat. And I listened to a lot, and I'm not good. I didn't sleep good last night. I didn't fall asleep till 1:15. And I didn't know why, but I think now I do, because I was just like worked up emotionally over something I didn't even play in this game. As I was telling Lydia, I didn't call a play in this. Why am I worked up? Moyer and I are just going at it via text last night, just back and forth and back and forth, because he feels like you, like Jake Heaps, like many, that this game was solely about four or five plays. And if four or five plays are different, the whole outcome is different.
I mean, I think I could make you an argument that it was about one play. And if Chris Carson doesn't fumble, they win the game yesterday or Sunday.
So I went back and
I think if he doesn't fumble, they win.
So I went back and I just started to watch the tape. And I see a run for 2 yards and a screen for minus three and a run for four and a run for minus two and a screen that was thrown away and a run for minus three and a run for two and a run for two and a run for two and a run for one. I saw New Orleans whoop your butt. You ran two good run plays the whole game. They whooped your butt. And I don't understand, it was just four plays. No, you couldn't run the ball. And every one of you got whipped. Justin Britt got whipped. Dwayne Brown got whipped. Mike Iupati got whipped. DJ Fluker couldn't move people. But, this was only about four plays that defined the game. No, they took you right out of your game.
I really don't see it that way.
Well, that's just what the tape shows. And
I agree with what you said. I know that their offensive line didn't play well and they didn't run the ball well. But ultimately, they threw the ball very well in the game. And their defense, I thought, played pretty well. Yes, they gave up 33 points in total. But when you actually go through where those points came from, 19 of them came from the defense. And six of those came on a short field of 28 yards. Brock, they gave up 13 points.
Yeah,
I mean, like that is not a problem. So you can pick and choose and point at the offensive line.
Oh, you want me to talk about the defense?
The defense missed a lot of tackles.
Let me talk about the defense. Because of a punt return for a touchdown, they weren't on the field. Because of a fumble return for a touchdown, they weren't on the field. But by the way, give credit to New Orleans for winning all three phases. So they didn't have to be on the field until when? Until the coach went for it on fourth down, didn't get it because he trusted his group. And then the Saints did what teams do, marched down the field 61 yards and embarrassed you. Alvin Kamara walked into the end zone, basically de-pantsed you.
They had two touchdowns offensively.
And then they come out.
What do you expect the defense to be perfect?
And then they come out to start the second half.
Yes, they did have two big touchdown drives.
Right down the field.
Teams that are allowed to score touchdowns against you occasionally in games.
To step on your throat and make it 27-7.
They stepped on your throat and made it
27-7. With a drive before half and a drive after half. Give the Saints the credit they're due.
Who's not giving the Saints credit?
People played well. No, people who say this was about the Seahawks in about four games. No, it was not.
I'm saying the Saints won a few of those big plays. I'm not saying, but the Seahawks did not get torched. I didn't see it that way. I think four or five plays go differently and everything is different, and that was on the Seahawks and some of those plays. Look, Pete Carroll, by the way, totally agreeing on the defense, thought they played pretty well.
I didn't think that their throwing game was a big deal in the game. I didn't think their offense was a big deal in the game for us. You know, we were okay about that. I mean, controlled that. It was more situational football. They had the great drive before half, which was the one that they needed.
They definitely had a great drive there, and they had a great drive right after the half. And
I believe
other than
Teddy
that,
Bridgewater had a rating of 105.
It was about situational football. It was about Pete making some mistakes on fourth downs,
sure,
on their team getting whooped on those fourth downs. And by the way, I've got the same problems with the offensive line that you do, and I think that's a major conversation for this team moving forward. But I didn't see it as them just as a full-scale team getting destroyed by the New Orleans Saints. I saw some major mistakes, a bunch of which were specifically on the coach and a bunch of which were mental. You throw in the Al Woods mental mistake on a fourth down, Brock, which led to one of those three touchdowns that we were just talking about, and this game is totally different.
That punt returner doesn't fumble. I think the Saints go up 36-7 at that point. And then what? Is it still about four plays? Teddy Bridgewater had a QB rating over 100. He had done nothing for them. Go look at Teddy Bridgewater's play in the preseason. Go look at it against the Rams. Go look at it last year. He did nothing. And then he has a QB rating over 100. Let me know when Trey Flowers makes a play on the ball. Somebody go ahead. Let me know when he wants to make a play on a ball on a third down, when he just gets thrown out of the way by Michael Thomas twice on critical third downs. Let me know when they stop him in the red zone on fourth down. Let me know, because this was all about the Seahawks. It wasn't about just all about the Seahawks. This is about a Saints team that came in and whooped you in your building in three phases. And if you want to stat out with all your passing yards, God bless
I'm
you.
I'm not statting out with the passing
God
yards.
God bless
you. Are throwing a lot of words into my mouth. I am not statting out.
If you
out.
Want to stat out with the yards and everything else that the Seahawks
keep
accomplished.
Keep statting, Mike.
Keep on statting out, all of you.
You and Mike Leach.
I'm watching situational football where they dominated you. Alvin Kamara, you know the Seahawks.
Hold on. Your point is going to be that they dominated in situational football.
Tackles.
That's literally the point that the other side is making. Is that in those big situations,
sure,
the Seahawks failed?
Sure, like
Al
third
Woods
down,
failed.
Like fourth down, like red zone,
yes,
like goal line.
Everybody
like
is saying
special
that
teams.
They
no,
failed
not.
In the crucial
Everybody
situation.
Is saying there's four plays that define the game.
If the Seahawks don't give up the fumble, if they don't give up the punt return, and if Al Woods doesn't jump off, just line up in the wrong spot, I think they win the game. In fact, I only think all they need to do, if one play goes differently, if they don't fumble, if Chris Carson doesn't fumble the ball and have it returned immediately for a touchdown, I think the Seahawks win this game. By the way, I think Pete would agree with that.
Okay.
I think if you were to ask Pete Carroll, he would agree with
that. And I disagree with that. I saw a Saints team that took you apart in all three phases. So if you don't give up a fumble, well,
but
you gave up a fumble.
Do you not watch all the other Seahawks games where it sort of appears that way?
Yeah, and I've not seen many where you're down 27-7 in the fourth quarter.
Why were they down 27-7? Because a couple of these awful plays. Because of the couple of plays. Because of the fumble. Because of the Al Woods play. And because of the punt return. Those three plays are the reason you gave up those 21 of the 27 points.
So after
that is responsible for literally three touchdowns.
I'm sorry. After Al Woods jumped off, you had to give up a touchdown?
I didn't say you had to.
Oh, okay.
But you had stopped them.
I'm sorry, the punt
but
return.
You had stopped them.
The punt return. Like, that was just an aberration, right? You just fell down. You didn't miss five tackles. They didn't make that play. Oh, they did. Oh, the fourth down stops. And then after they get the ball on the 39, you just, what, they didn't drive it 61 yards? And Alvin Kamara didn't break 20 tackles on the game? You missed 20 tackles. Not my numbers, their numbers. In-house. But, yeah, it was really only about these four plays. I just think that is an easy way to spin it.
Nothing is only
better.
About four plays, Brock. Obviously, the Seahawks did not have their best game, and they didn't do enough in the other 100 plays to get it done. No one is going to argue against that. But if those three plays had gone differently, I think the Seahawks still win the game, because that's what the Seahawks do. They're not going to win every play. This team is not going to dominate, and I've got major concerns about their offensive line, and I think that it is right now by far the biggest problem on this team. I'm not that worried about their defense. I think they gave up 13 points in the game that didn't come in a short field, and I'm not going to worry too much about them. And oh, by the way, of those 13 points, 7 came after the dumb Al Woods play. So really, if you want to take out special teams mistakes and short plays, the Seahawks gave up a touchdown in the game, and I think they're absolutely entitled to do that going against the Saints offense that is supposedly pretty well respected and has some guys on the outside.
Incredibly
one-sided. I don't think it is.
Alvin Kamara, Mike, the more they would have handed him the ball.
Yeah, Alvin Kamara's good. No
yeah, Alvin Kamara caught him by surprise, guys.
Right?
He didn't know
understand.
How good
no,
he was.
They did not.
But Brock,
they couldn't tackle him. He dragged
Jadeveon
Clowney 9 yards.
Take away bad special teams plays, and they give up 7 points.
But they
take away bad play, but the bad plays made by the offense and the special teams, and they gave up 7 points.
No, they did not.
Yeah, they did.
That's so convenient to look at and not realize all the plays that were made after that.
I know, but there are also, but you're ignoring all the times they did make them punt. You're ignoring all the plays they did make.
All the times they made them punt?
Were there five punts in the game?
A couple early when the New Orleans was totally discombobulated and you still couldn't back them up? And you still couldn't make the interception because you have won this year in three games? Because you still can't defend the pass, Trey Flowers, who hasn't made one play on the ball this year? Because you couldn't get off the field on third down or fourth down in critical spots time and time again in that game? I just say be very careful.
You're older than me, and I like you, which is why I'm going to give you the last word on this.
For those of you that are just trying to color this
plays. I don't think this argument is over. It's 7:10, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know, the voice of Seattle sports. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. Here's what you need to know up first.
Oh, man.
Still feels good
today. Sheesh, this is the kind of stuff you may get on the podcast. You can download that sucker. Just text us to podcast 710-710. We sat down with Pete Carroll yesterday at Seahawks headquarters, and I thought it was interesting, man. He took a lot of the blame yesterday, and he needed to. Said that he needed to be better. I thought he was a major factor in the Seahawks losing Chris Carson's fumble. Also a huge problem. That's going to be a priority for the team this week. In terms of injuries, said that Dwayne Brown shouldn't have too much of a problem getting back on the field. Obviously, huge news as he may be their best offensive lineman. And then Tedrick Thompson, thank God, is going to return to practice this week. A man who managed to cost them 15 yards even when he wasn't in uniform. Which is incredibly challenging to do. Look, overall, Pete's team is in a really interesting spot. Brock, we can argue about specific plays or whether it was the whole game. Here's the biggest problem with the Seahawks right now. They're a team that has built its lineup, built its roster for a running game that right now isn't there.
Correct.
And if that offensive line isn't going to create holes, they can throw the ball. They can turn to a throwing offense, but they haven't drafted, developed, and acquired players for that style of an offense, and they are not playing to their supposed strengths.
Yeah, I think we can all agree upon that. In that first half of action, part of the reason that Pete was a bit out of sorts, why he was trying to go for it at times, is they couldn't establish the very identity of the team he wants to be. They couldn't run the ball. And on a third and one, he gets stuffed, and on a fourth and one, he gets stuffed. And from that point forward, there was a lot of questionable decision-making. I'll give credit to the other side because I think they really outplayed the Seahawks in all three phases of that game and took advantage of some of their mistakes, which is what the NFL is all about. This team has got to get right. The good news, Dwayne Brown does not have a significant arm injury. You do not want to try to get right without, to me, your best offensive lineman on this team. Maybe the better news, you do go down to Arizona, and you should be able to exploit the line of scrimmage against those guys. And if you don't,
better news.
And if you
don't, they always struggle in Arizona.
If you do not exploit the line of scrimmage in this matchup down there with their O line and D line, that podcast could be on fire next week.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Mariners begin their final homestand of the 2019 season. Houston will be in town for two. Have they beaten Houston yet? Yeah, I forget.
1-17.
1-17. Just checking. These are the final two. See if you can get to 3-17. That'd be good. Mariners will be honoring Felix's 15 years in Seattle with Felix week throughout the homestand, culminating in a Thursday night finale of the Kings Court. Felix will be making his final appearance at former Safeco Field, now T-Mobile, and I think he should be honored. I would hope that would be a sellout or something close to it, don't you think? After all the Felix days, after all the opportunities everyone's had to view him and pay their respect, I would hope that you get one more big-time sellout on Thursday.
Well, I'm going to do my part. I'm going to be there with some of the Fox crew that's coming into town for the USC-Washington game. I'll tell you, I'll be excited. I'll tune in tonight at 7 o'clock as well. Why? I kind of anxious to watch Shed Long have his final week, and Kyle Lewis have his final week, and can he add to his home run barrage and some of these young pieces that this season was really all about. It was about their story and who would emerge and who would evolve. I'd put Marco Gonzalez right at the top of the list. He'll get one more start on this homestand looking for his 17th win. And yes, this will be a culmination of all that Felix has done. Maybe not for the last 3 years for this regime, but certainly for a decade as one of the game's best.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, nice job in the polls for UW. They climbed five spots. They are now at number 17 in the AP poll. They'll face number 21 USC on Saturday. In the meantime, Wazoo dropping out of the rankings entirely with their loss to UCLA, although they did still receive some votes. Where'd they end up being, Kyle? About 29, 30, somewhere
they're
in that
like
range?
34. 34. It was quite a fall.
Yeah, you really don't want to give up 50 points and a half. It's not good. The voters tend to frown on that kind of a thing.
Even if they were all sleeping.
We're going to talk to Todd McShay today, though, at 8 o'clock. Very curious where he has Jacob Eason. It's been a debate, Brock, that I know you've had with Howdy about whether he will be one and done. I'm with Howdy. I think it's going to be 1 year of Jacob Eason here in Seattle.
Well, after watching the game tape from BYU and Tom McShay was on the sideline, that argument for me doesn't hold a lot of water. He was just tremendous over the weekend. It's a bummer because this would had Utah beaten USC and had Wazoo finished off UCLA. You're talking about one of the biggest games of the weekend with Wazoo going to Salt Lake City with two teams that would have been in Utah top 10. And Wazoo, maybe even in the top 15 in that matchup. Unfortunately, both stumble. And now you set up a top 25 matchup at home with number 17, UW, and number 21, USC coming to town.
Three things you need to know every morning at 7:15. Some good passion out here today. And by the way, the text machine on all sides of this.
Doesn't it feel right, though?
Yeah, we may have to keep talking through this today.
That kind of emotion feels right. I didn't know I had it in me.
I didn't either.
Did you know you had it in you?
I mean, I was surprised. Usually when you're that emotional about things, you're right. So it was so weird to hear you like come down totally wrong on the issue, but still feel as passionately as you did. I'm just not used to that.
You're right.
It's cool that you brought all these stats.
Yeah.
Can you tell me why you brought them on a buried treasure map? What is that? You're watching on the stream at 710sports.com or the 710 Sports app, Brock, did you decide to use some buried treasure map?
I was so mad yesterday.
Is that the map from Goonies?
I started ripping apart this manila folder. I'm going to write these numbers down, and these people are going to take it.
Is that One-Eyed Willie? So what is the deal over there? Let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
Plus, a wild card.
If you could have two attributes of animals, what attributes would you choose?
The girth of a gorilla and the face of a lion.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
So what am I missing? What's bringing out the passion?
Well, whether or not this game was about three, four, five plays that the Seahawks were beaten on, or whether they were just ultimately destroyed throughout the whole game and not up to the challenge.
Oh, okay. Which side did you have and what did Brock have?
Brock thinks that they were just physically beaten in every phase. And I think that happens to them sometimes, that their defense actually played pretty darn well. And if you don't have the fumble, the punt return, and the Al Woods mistake, I think they win that game.
Yeah, because I counted up. I mean, you can honestly say, they gave the Saints four touchdowns because, you have the two touchdowns that were returns, the punt, the fumble return, the play in the third quarter where Pete went for the fourth down at the 42-yard line, didn't get it, 58-yard drive, seven plays, and then the,
I got to stop you right here. Hold on 1 second. They just gave them. You're telling me the New Orleans Saints punt returner had nothing to do with breaking five tackles? You're telling me that Kamara had nothing to do with 109 yards after contact and breaking 20 tackles and walking into your end zone and embarrassing you?
That's right. That's exactly what I'm saying.
They didn't give them. Those guys took it from them.
They gave them, but still, I mean, you can say right now the Saints were the better team. I would say that.
Yeah.
I mean, but also that they set them up to get more success. I mean, particularly, what about the field goal that was missed, and then you get the penalty, and then they get another touchdown?
Sure, you have 39 yards. You have to drive still for a touchdown, and you have to have a goal line stand. You got to execute. You got to run.
How many times have you seen that,
you
got to
run
though?
Over Shaquille Griffin. Come you got to run through to the
How many times
clowning.
Have you seen that, though, where a team
How many times
where
have I seen 20 missed tackles? Never.
How many times have you seen
contact?
A team appear to be off the field, then take a dumb penalty like that, and then they've sort of reached that that moment, and then after that they crumble.
Absolutely,
that's generally what happens to defenses.
Can play a role,
yes.
But I think diminishing John what those Saints did physically to you, you had two good run plays the whole game. You had Carson's before he fumbled.
One of them you fumbled on.
Yeah, and so you can't even call them that. You had a 13-yard run where you actually sprung a hole. There was not one other run play in that game where you blocked people. I mean, I went back and watched all of those run plays. Every single one of those run plays had an offensive lineman that was just whipped at the line of scrimmage. So to me, to just say you gave them four touchdowns is discrediting the New Orleans Saints in every phase that scored.
But if I say that they were the better team, am I discrediting them?
I don't think you're discrediting them if you say they were the better team. But if it was just four plays that you gave to them, to me, that discredits
them. More than four plays. I mean, what about the two punts by Morstead that went inside the five-yard line?
Correct.
Okay. What about some of the other penalties, some of the other mistakes?
But we can do this forever. I mean, you can always point at every single play in a game eventually and say, this one was a good one and this one was a bad one. But ultimately, if the Seahawks had played better on those three plays or made better decisions, then I think they win the game. If Chris Carson's knee is down a split second earlier and he doesn't fumble, I think they could have even gotten away with the punt return touchdown. If his knee is down and if Al Woods lines up a couple inches to the right, I think they win that game.
Yeah.
And I feel pretty darn confident.
I just disagree with that, but that's okay. That's the beauty of this argument.
Last night, John, we got another chance to watch Kirk Cousins. Thank God. That was Case Keenum. Sorry.
Case Keenum, yeah.
I could not confuse those two guys more often. No, they are like the same person in my mind. Sorry. Is that going to be the last time we have to see him, or are we going to see Dwayne Haskins next time out?
No, John Gruden came out and said he's staying with Case Keenum. So, I think it probably is time to try to make that move because they're sitting there 0-3 and they look terrible and they're among one of the worst teams in football. But Jay Gruden, whose job is probably on the line, is going to stay by Case for now.
How bad are these Cardinals? 0-2-1. How challenged are they right now in their three phases of the game?
Still offensively, they're kind of up and down, but Kyler Murray, I think, is really good. The running game hasn't been there. The blocking hasn't been there, and the defense isn't very good at all. So, they're certainly among the worst five teams in football and a very beatable team.
So is this a good matchup for the Seahawks at this stage, kind of where they're at and coming off this game? Is this a favorable matchup? If you could pick any team to go play on the road, is this one that you would sign up for?
No, you want to sign up for Miami. Miami or the Jets. It's like they're abysmally bad. I mean, biblically bad is what you can say for Miami. But no, this is a good matchup because particularly when you have a Thursday game that's so important coming up after that against the Rams, I mean, you want to try to get in there, run the football. And I think the matchup that's good is that they are not good stopping the run. And so if you can get good running a game and get out of there in 2 hours and 53 minutes, it's not bad.
You chat with those guys down in Arizona, right, during the football season.
Sure.
Are they excited about Kyler down there still?
Yes. Very much so. And you can see the crowd is. I mean, they're getting some of the fans back because one of the things that the owner was upset about was the fact that they weren't getting the crowds last year. People weren't showing up. And so I think you can see he's generating a lot of excitement.
Now, you say that. I thought that what didn't have anything to do with the play on the field, though. Didn't they change the Metamucil that they were serving and a lot of the crowd decided they didn't want to come anymore?
The Metamucil? No.
I think like a lot of the old people in their Rascal Scooters. We can't make it. They've changed the Metamucil formula that they now serve at the Cardinal Stadium there. I think a lot of them just didn't come because of that.
Nah, it was more just how bad the team was last year. I mean, let's put it this way.
I've read about the Metamucil.
When you're sitting atop the draft and you got Josh Rosen at quarterback, I mean, that's not the Metamucil stays at home with the
probably where it belongs. Let's do the wild card.
Time now for the wild card. What
wild card? Mr. Professor Clayton?
Yes.
What's the best brand and flavor of gum?
I've always liked Juicy Fruit. I don't know if it's still popular now. I mean, Juicy Fruit I still think has the best because it has
underrated.
The best flavor.
Absolutely underrated gum is Juicy Fruit.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right about that, John. I'm with you.
Yeah, so I mean, Juicy Fruit. Like, I don't know, Howdy, which one do you like?
I personally like Trident Spearmint flavor. Mm. I really enjoy that. Very refreshing.
No, I've always been Juicy Fruit. I was curious. I'd like to find out in the locker room, because, so many of the coaches and that and are liking to have all the... Because I know Chuck Knox always was, I think, big on Juicy Fruit.
Mm. Really?
I kind of wonder who
that's
would be
old
the
school,
Juicy
man.
Fruit
the old school pack of Juicy Fruit, the little five sticks in there. Mm-hmm. That's a good old school.
Did you
one.
Ever like Hubba Bubba?
Yeah, I like all that stuff.
I also like Fruit Stripes, the one with the zebra on them. That was a good one.
Howdy, you like all flavor blasted garbage. You're so everything you like has to be flavor blasted.
Your flavor blasted Metamucil, Howdy, that you love.
John, thank you. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you.
All right, John Clayton with us every morning at 7:50. That's good to see that the crowd's making their way back. I hope they have
into the Red Sea.
Yeah, I hope they have the whole scooter parking everything set for everybody.
Hey, Kyle, you want to send that little bite to Gambo and Burns and Gambo down there in Arizona?
That's unnecessary. Wolf,
actually, I won't. Brock, you've goaded me into that before. But now Salk will have no platform for defense.
That's right. You're going to leave me
exposed.
One
more week. Should we do a little crossover with those guys like on Friday?
Oh, God. Do you want our last thing we do together here to be a crossover?
Another battle of the birds?
Should we bring Gambo on? Let's bring at least Gambo.
Oh, my God.
On
we don't
week.
Have to do
no,
that.
We got to bring Gambo
no,
on. Sure.
Come on. That's exhausting. I can't even think about all that. I mean, That's too much.
You know what, Brock? Shut up.
Seriously. All right. Coming up next, was Pete talking to a former player through us yesterday? I got some sound that may prove it. Next on Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Which former player was Pete Carroll talking to through us? I have a theory. It's coming up here in just a moment. Just a reminder, today is Tuesday. Brock and I will be together today. Tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday will be the last radio show that we do together here. We are not going to continue this as a daily radio show at the end of the week. It'll be changing. It'll become a weekly podcast. We hope you'll continue to be with us. We hope you will join us. It's pretty easy to do. In fact, you can have that podcast automatically delivered to your smartphone every single Wednesday morning. You can start that process by texting podcast to 710-710. You're going to get a bounce back message. You then write yes. And then you get another bounce back message. You click the link and you click on subscribe, and that's it. That's all you got to do. You're then getting it every single Wednesday delivered directly to your phone, and you can listen to it from there. So it's pretty easy to do. We're excited. We're excited about this becoming a once a week deal instead of doing it every day. Obviously, there's parts of it that hurt and are sad. And, I've been reading through some of the emails and texts and tweets and things people have sent us over the last week or two, Brock. It's humbling. It's incredibly nice. And to hear some of the impact that the show has had on folks out there is incredibly nice to hear. And I don't know, it's something we necessarily thought about when we started doing this. I'll talk a little bit more about that later in the week. But you know, thank you for all the kind words. They really do mean a lot. And we hope you'll continue to stay with us for a podcast.
I would agree with all of that. Thank you for not sending many of those my way. You know, I don't handle sentimentality very well and emotion very well. So thank you for, you know, just keeping those to yourself. Maybe at the end of the week or maybe over the weekend or at some point I can read a lot of those emails. But thank you for seriously, for the connection that we've had with all of you guys for 10 years.
Friday is not going to be a big final show
it is not.
But I'm sure it'll still have some emotion for both of us, certainly for me. So I think maybe I'm hoping by tomorrow I'm going to be able to tell you guys what the new show will be. Maybe tomorrow or Thursday that'll be replacing us, lineup change, et cetera, here at 710. So we will get to all of that, I promise, very soon. And then that'll kick off next week. Okay.
Who was he talking to?
Who was Pete talking
to? Who's talking about you?
All right, well, let me play you the sound, and then you can try to guess. Let me see. Where did this go?
Who's talking about you, Richard?
Well, let me play this. This is from Pete yesterday. We spoke to Pete. We were asking about Russell Wilson and the kind of game that Russell had.
Who was talking about you?
Thank you. And I thought that Pete's comments were pointed.
He had a fantastic game going. I didn't realize how accurate he had been early on until we saw the halftime stats. But he was a little low on some balls, you know. I mean, well, let's criticize him. You know, he had it through for 400 yards again, you know, had a huge game. But let's be critical that there were some balls placement-wise that could have really helped us, you know. But he made a ton of great plays. The scrambled plays just alone were the factors in the game.
Who's Pete talking to? Why is he saying that?
Let's criticize him.
He's talking to Doug Baldwin.
Right. I mean, he knows Doug's a P1.
Who was talking about you?
How furious is Doug Baldwin that it took until he retired that he would actually hold Russell Wilson accountable?
Right.
I mean, he is just bathing in Doug Baldwin's tears right now.
Don't you think that Doug, that's all for Doug? That he knows, I mean, of anybody, he knows Doug's listening, obviously. P1, big rabbit ears pointed right at the radio set. Like, he knows Doug is listening to all of this. Didn't you just imagine when, like, Brock, I was looking at you when he said that, like, oh my God, he's just talking to Doug, right? I just assume he's just talking directly to Doug.
Doug Baldwin is sitting in his dark room with pictures of Russell Wilson throwing interceptions, just going, where was this? Where was this for years?
Is that what you got out of it, or am I crazy?
I don't know. I was trying to figure it out. Yesterday was a very perplexing day, right? I was trying to figure out who and what that was about. Like, you see, at first I thought he's just like tongue-in-cheek. You know, let's criticize him for his 400-yard day. Let's criticize him for going 13 for 14 in the first half. Let's criticize him for running away from four sacks. Let's criticize him for throwing for 400 yards and two rushing touchdowns, right? So I thought at first, but then he turned it to, well, let's be critical. Let's do that.
All right, but let's criticize. Let's do that. Let's criticize Russ today, because why not? He threw for 406 yards. Let's criticize.
I mean, the real answer is that Doug Baldwin was kind of right, that he hasn't been held that accountable, and he wants to make sure he's setting a new precedent. Now that it's Russell's team, I'm the only one who can hold you accountable, so I'm going to do it.
Well, or maybe Pete, on a day of accountability, and we're going to talk more about that here in a sec, like was trying to spread that around. And look, I have no problems with what Pete said yesterday. It did make me laugh because I was thinking about Doug and Richard and all the issues that they had with Pete not holding Russ accountable. But I don't think Russ had a great game. We talked about it yesterday. I think he missed a couple of key throws. I think there's a texter here a few minutes ago. It's now gone, but it said something about, you know, take away the bombed DK Metcalf and 150 garbage yards at the end. And Russ really didn't have a very good day. And the miss to Tyler Lockett on fourth down and the other miss to Tyler Lockett on fourth and inches on a deep throw, which was totally unnecessary, are going to fall on the quarterback a little bit. He didn't have his best game. And maybe Pete's just trying to spread that accountability around a little bit.
Well, criticize him.
Yeah, let's criticize. Yeah, let's do that.
Let's be critical.
Let's criticize him.
Let's criticize him, Brock. What do you think?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, 13 to 14 in the first half. I don't know what more he could have done. That game got out of hand. It's 27 to 7 when he gets the ball with 7 minutes to go in the third quarter because they score, you know, you try to run on third and one, you try to run on fourth and one, and they dominate you physically in both those spots. And the next two times the Saints have the ball, it goes from 13-7 to 27-7. Before you get it with 7 minutes to go in the third quarter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think you're just kind of up against it. Honestly, when he got the ball back, he was 13 of 14 in that first half.
I know, but man, I tell you, you make that throw on fourth down to Tyler Lockett, and he's in the end zone, and it's such a different football game if he executes what he's supposed to. I think accountability is a key phrase with Pete and with this team, and it's something, look, we talked about it yesterday. When the Seahawks don't have great games and everybody wants us to kill Pete on the show the next day, he generally takes the starch out of that by killing himself, by saying, look, I screwed up. I did this wrong. I did that wrong. And we asked him about that yesterday.
You know, I never forget there was an instance down in L.A. when one of the chiefs of police down there took accountability for an instance that happened in the community. There was a big shoot up in the environment, and he went door to door and apologized to all the people for the officers that had wildly shot. And there was a moment there where the people they were really outraged about what had happened, but his ability to say, look, we made a terrible mistake, this is what I'm going to do about it. I do remember that clearly. It happened in L.A., and I thought that was the epitome of leadership.
And don't you think Pete does a lot of that? I made a mistake, and this is what we're going to do about it.
Yeah, and I think behind the scenes, he does an awful lot of that. Now, you know, some of the veteran guys, the ones we mentioned here in this segment, did they feel like maybe the attention was always on Russell and is critical on Russell? No, but I don't think you ever heard any of them say, Pete's a Dodger.
That's right.
When we win it, it's all about us, and when we lose it, it's all about, you know, you, and you know, you didn't do anything in it to be involved. And I played for coaches like that, and it's challenging. Like, no, aren't we all in this? I mean, we're all in this together, win or lose. No, we lost. It's on you. What do you mean? No. And I don't think Pete really carries any of that. And I think it's why that locker room generally and genuinely has had a lot of affection for him, because he does. He owns it. He did. He had, man, you look back at it as well, and we can talk about some of these challenge areas and missed tackles and get back into that debate at 9 this morning or what have you. But you look at the challenges that Pete had in the decision-making process, and he was right. And going back and actually watching the game, at 13, the game is 13-7. All right, with less than 4 minutes to go in the second quarter, you drive down, you've got a third and one, and you run just kind of your 3-by-1, your little read zone deal, and you give it to Carson. He's in the game. And he plows in there, man, and he just got stuffed. You know, he just gets stopped. And now it's about 3.5 minutes, and Pete had his decision make at the 40. Like, what do I do here? Right? And remember, we talked about this season. Like, if this is Russ's team and this is an offensive first team, what are you going to do?
Do some of those
40 things. Yard line, right? On a fourth and one situation.
I have no problems with him going for it there.
You didn't?
No.
Well, in retrospect, I think that is the one call of any that he would have punted. And punted it down and trusted his defense.
No, I think that's that whole cowardly punt thing. Like, I would not have punted that. He didn't get it. But they ran it again on that play?
Yeah, then they ran power. So the first one, they kind of run their read zone. And the next one, they line up, they run power. Upati comes around. I think if Chris is patient, New Orleans just sold out. Man, they just plowed right through into that A and B gap. I think if he was patient, he could have kicked it out. but you never want to stop your feet on fourth and one either. And, you know, they make the play and they go nuts and then they go down and score. And Kamara's, you know.
And by the way, I don't mind them throwing the ball on some of those key fourth downs. My objection is the deep throw that they made to Tyler Lockett. I don't think you need to throw it 40 yards downfield.
Yep.
But if they had run a little play action play and Russell, you know, a bootleg or something, I mean, there's plenty of ways to find a, to pick up a fourth down other than just trying to muscle it in. I didn't mind that call. Of all the things, I thought that was actually just fine.
You spent a year with Belichick, and I know they don't lose a lot. Would he be accountable? Would he be a guy the day after a game? I'm trying to think of other coaches as public-facing.
Well, let's criticize him.
I think Andy Reid does some of that.
He spreads it around to everybody, but he also does the same thing with success. I mean, Belichick has taken a totally different tact. Everything they do is as a team. When they win, they won all three phases of the game. When they lose all three phases of the game. I mean, he will absolutely, he won't tell you why. He won't get into the details of either of those, but he will happily say, yep, we got beat. We lost.
I'm curious, Textboy. 710-710. If you found a more kind of forward-facing coach that just accepts responsibility, real accountability when it goes wrong, as Pete does. I don't know if there's many that I've come across that do it in just the public realm as openly as he does. Say, nope, I was off, man. That was a bad game. That was a bad call. That was a bad choice. That was a bad moment. Kind of butchered that, Andy. You know, I don't know of too many, but maybe the text toy does. 7-10.
Well, Pete maybe would have wanted to change that fourth down play, Brock, but I don't think there was a more impactful play in the game than Chris Carson losing that fumble. What is he going to do about it, and is it fixable? Those questions and more on Coors Light's Blue 42. Coming up next, I'm Brock and Salk.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready? Right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Like the text like this one. Whoa, I'm late to the party as a current podcaster. I just heard of your switch 1 hour per week. You guys have been a staple in my life for the last 10 years. But as a business owner and a member of the National Guard, I get it. Family time's precious, boys. Thank you for all the good times. Mm. Well, we appreciate it and hope you will continue to join us. Text podcast to 710-710. Follow the prompts from there and you'll be subscribed. It'll be delivered to your phone every single Wednesday. We'd love to have you with us.
I know I become cynical now, but can I stop the hype there? Like if it was a staple every day of his life, we've been talking about this for 8 days.
Well, right, but he's saying he gets it late on podcast.
Oh, okay. All right, good. Okay.
I'm late to the party as a current podcaster.
As a current podcast. Okay,
yeah. And he didn't say every day, just
I'm
a staple.
Going a stop the hype.
What does he say?
Stop the hype.
I'm ordering a stop the hype?
Yes.
It sounds like he says I'm born a
no,
stop
the hype. No, he's ordering.
Blowing stop
the hype. I'm blowing the whistle.
Oh, he's blowing a stop the hype. Huh.
I'm sounding the alarm.
Do you know
that's
who
what he says?
I think Jim Nantz predicted more plays than Tony Romo did in Sunday's
really?
Game, by the way.
I couldn't hear any of it.
Nantz is pretty good, too.
Being in Vegas, couldn't hear it, could just see it.
All right.
Hey, three questions for Brock every day, 745. Let's start here. Chris Carson has four fumbles in 3 games, Brock. Is this fixable?
Yes, it is. It is fixable. He is a little bit loose with the ball. He did have a couple fumbles last year. I think they recovered them when they did happen. But, yeah, I do believe, Pete, that a bunch of this is fundamental. And I know the priority that taking care of the football is in that building. It's of the highest degree. And they are plus one on the year. How about that? Plus one. And he has three of the four, actually all four fumbles he's involved with. Coach Carroll talked about exactly how they're going to continue to just harp on those fundamentals.
The discipline of the carriage of the ball just needs to be more consistent, and he's drawn a lot of attention to himself. So, you know, he's going to continue to have to be really good at it. So he's got to get really, really good at it at this point. And we're all over. There's not one step that we haven't addressed here. We have to get to where he has the success, and then we start adding on to the successes, and then that's how you come back out of it.
95% of them has still got to be about the fury and the hair on fire and run through people and embarrass people. But there's got to be 5% of his game that understands every time of contact. When he's talking about carriage, that is just making contact with your body. I mean, as big and strong and powerful as he is, Mike, if he puts that ball into his body, it's not coming out. Every single one of these have been what? There's been air. There's been space between the ball and his body, giving someone the ability to come through and punch that ball out. So at that moment, through contact, he has just got to pull it tighter to his body. I do think he can fix that.
All right, question number two. You know, I hate to make this all about the running game, but that's supposed to be this team's strength. We haven't seen it yet. What would you do to fix the Seahawks' stagnant run game?
They got to get to more of their mix, man. Like last year, I was thinking back to so many of these games, and even in the preseason last year, there was toss sweep, there was trap, there was some counter, there was jet sweep, there was more in the run game. And I know some of this builds upon itself, and all of that was on Shoddy's call sheet. It's not like it disappeared and he went to a Mike Leach note card, index card of plays. So it is all there. It is still very much in their base run game, but I need to see some more of that, because just lining up, it feels like these teams, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, and certainly the Saints, are just teeing off on you. So whenever you get into that situation, that's where I like a little bit of variance. Give them a little bit of trap. If they want to just come downhill at you, good. Use that momentum against them, right? Get them up the field and hit it between the A-gaps. A little bit of a jet sweep, you know, to these different receivers. I'll say it again. I think we mentioned this yesterday. To me, John Ursu has got to be up. This offense needs his quickness. Malik and Jaron and these guys, to me, are just catch and fall down guys. I need a little John Ursua, a little mix, even if it's in the jet sweep game two or three times in a game, or the threat of that. I just need to see a little bit more variance, a little bit more depth in that run game. I'm not feeling that an awful lot.
I appreciate that you think they're catch and fall down guys. Don't they first need to, you know, catch it before they fall down? Question number three. Will Disley's been catching a ton of balls, and it looks like he's been doing pretty well in the running game as well, in the pass blocking game even, Brock. Is this sustainable for Will Disley?
Yes. And isn't it kind of crazy that he was a D lineman wearing a weird number for like 3 years of his college career? The guy here, it was his touchdown from the other day.
Here's Russ from the shotgun. Now he's going to spin out of it. He's going to roll right. He's going to fire a shot in the end zone. It's caught. Will Disley, touchdown Seahawks. That will end the game.
Don't you have confidence when the ball goes his way? Seriously, when that ball's out of Russell's hand and you see Disley on the other end of it, don't you just have an immense amount of confidence based on his four games to begin last year before the injury, based on these three games, based on preseason and training camp? Like, that guy can really catch the football and has shown you a catching radius and range to be able to go back shoulder. A lot of times, Mike, when you're 270 pounds, you're an inline tight end that's going to run flat routes, right? Maybe a little crossing route, maybe an occasional seam route, but it really doesn't matter what route they have him run. He's more than adept and capable and has enough body control, even at 265, 270, to come down with it. And he is on pace to have just an incredible, incredible season.
That is today's Coors Light's Blue 42. Tons of text messages coming in. Thanks a lot, Brock. I'd expect that comment from Salk. But
I know,
you?
I know.
Come
I'm
on,
sorry.
Man.
I'm sorry.
It's not right. Yes. I will miss Brock. Salk, not so much. All right. Thanks. Well, that's nice. Well, we'll still be here, I promise. We'll continue the podcast every week, and then you'll hear us throughout the station on all different shows. We'll both do regular segments throughout the day, throughout the week, and we're not going anywhere. We're still going to be a part of the station and things going on here. We'll still be on social media and digital, et cetera. Brock's going to do the Above and Beyond podcast still, so we're not going away. We're just going to move on from the daily radio show and do a bunch of other stuff.
By the way, and it's been a while with some of the Above and Beyonds, I've been working on some things. Tony Bennett, the Virginia coach, I got locked down and booked. That's going to be here in a couple weeks.
Nice.
We're going to tape with him.
Excited.
I'm excited about that one. I can't wait to do that one and many others that are going to be coming
cool.
up here soon enough.
You can always get that at aboveandbeyondpodcast.com,
that's
I believe
right.
is the right address,
yep.
aboveandbeyondpodcast.com. All right. There's been quite the debate over the future for Jacob Eason here on this show. Howdy has been in the this guy's one and done camp. Brock has been blindly thinking he's going to be here for a long time. If you can't tell, I side with Howdy. We will ask Todd McShay about this next on Brock and Salk.